We're holding page Lamedtes in Shabbos Ois Nunvav. Continuing on the topic of Matan Torah, Omer Chizkiya, my dichtiv, what does it mean in the Pasuk in Tehillim? Mishamayim hishmata din, you Hashem made heard from the heavens a judgment. Rashi says it means the din as in the dinim of Torah. Tosfos says it means also the judgment that, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, that the world is going to cease to exist if the Torah is not accepted. Eretz Yorah v'Shakata, the world, the earth, the world was fearful and then it was quiet. So Chizkiya asks him, Yorah lama shakta, v'im shakta lama yorah. If it was fearful, then why afterward? Then why was it silent? And if it was silent, then why was it fearful? What are these two things? What happened here? Ela b'tchila yorah l'vasayf shakta means first the world was afraid. What if the Jewish people don't accept the Torah? Then, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, Hashem says that in that case, the world has no reason to exist and it's going to return to Tohu v'vayu, all of a sudden, and then at the end, when the Jewish people accepted the Torah, shakta, then it calmed down, realizing that now it has a right to exist. V'lama yara, so why was it afraid? Is Kiddur Shlokish, is based on what Shlokish says. D'amr Shlokish, my dichtiv, what does it mean at the end of my Bereshit, it says, v'hi erev v'yivoker yoyim ha-shishi, hey yaseir olamali. Why does it have the extra hey? All the other ones, it says yoyim echad, yoyim sheni, etc. Only here does it say ha-shishi. So malamad shehisna, kodesh baruch hu, my Bereshit, means that when Hashem first created the world, he made a condition with my Bereshit. V'amalahem, he says, im Yisrael mekabel masa Torah, if the Jewish people will accept the Torah, ata miskaimin, then you will continue to exist. V'im lav, and if not, and imachzir eschem l'toyu v'voyu, if not, then I'm returning you back to your original primordial chaos, because then the world has no reason to exist. So Rashi explains, in other words, the hey means the unique sixth that we find elsewhere. So here it means the sixth of Sivan on which the Torah was given. So it's hinting at right there in Ma'aseh Bereishis that it all depends on what's going to happen 2,500 years later on that special Yom HaShishi. Tosfos brings up, this Gemara is also in Avodah Zarah. Tosfos brings up the question over there, what about according to Rabbi Yossi? He said according to him, the Torah was given on the seventh of Sivan. So how was he doubting it? So Tosfos says, okay, listen, you know, first of all, maybe it's the sixth day since Moshe started speaking to them, because we learned before that on the first day on Rosh Chodesh, he didn't speak to them because they were tired from the trip. Or maybe it means, again, because we said the Torah was supposed to be given on the sixth and then it was postponed for one day. Moshe over there says those answers are a bit of a doichik. They're a little bit forced. Rather, Moshe says, going back to, we talked a couple of days ago, the famous question that the Magen Avraham brings up, and here the Moshe brings it up before him. How is it that Matan Torah then was on the 51st day of Sfira, whereas we know it's supposed to be on the 50th? So the vort is, Marsha says that what happened during those 49 days? We know they were purifying themselves. They'd had the Tumah of Mitzrayim. They were on the 49th level of Tumah and so forth. And during those 49 days, they worked to refine themselves, to bring themselves up to the 49th level of Kedusha. Then on the 50th day, they were already, which is the day before Matan Torah actually took place, according to Rabbi Yossi, then they were already ready. But still, because as the Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos, that Yiras Chet has to come before Torah, Yiras Chet has to come before Chochmah. Therefore, they had to have that 50th day of preparation when they reached the full level of Yiras Chet, and only the next day could the Torah be given. Therefore, Marsha says, therefore, the Torah is hinting at the giving of the Torah with Yom HaShishi, even according to Rabbi Yossi, because to suggest that point, that it wasn't so much the fact that they received the Torah, but the fact that they reached that ultimate level of Yiras Chet and were ready to receive the Torah. But in any case, that's why it says Yom HaShishi. Marsha also points out the fact over there that you also have that the initials of Yom HaShishi by Chulah Shemayim says spell out Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is in fact why we say those four words in Kiddush. Yom HaShishi is the end of the previous pasuk. Why do we begin there instead of just beginning by Chulu? Because we want to have the words that spell out Hashem's name. Because after all, Hashem created the world using the letters of his name. So therefore you have, that's like the signature over there at the end.
All the rest of the names are still wrong.
So Rabbi Yossi, that's the thing. So Rabbi Yossi agrees that the regular day of Shavuos is on Vav. That's what Marsha said. The vote is, Rabbi Yossi would say, that particular year it was postponed the one day. But ordinarily, we celebrate Zman Matan Torah Seinu on the day that we were actually fully ready for Matan Torah, even though according to Rabbi Yossi, it was postponed for one day. Yeah. Continues the Gemara. Dorash Rab Simoi, b'shashik dimu Yisrael nasa l'nishma. When the Jewish people said first nasa and then nishma, so first we're ready to do whatever it is Hashem tells us, and only then we'll try to understand the reasons behind it and everything. Bo shishim riba shamalach hasharis, 600,000 malach hasharis came down l'chol echad v'echad v'Yisrael. And on every single yid, they tied on two crowns. There were, at that time, there were just about 600,000 Jewish men between the ages of 20 and 60. Those are the ones we're talking about. It talks about in Sifrei Kabbalah. I mean, there were many more if there, then when you consider the people above those ages, below those ages, the wives, the children, etc. There must have been a couple of million people, but primarily we talk about those of the 600,000 primary neshamas, and everybody else's neshamas are an outgrowth of theirs. So therefore, so you need only 600,000 malachim, and they tied onto each yid two crowns. Rashi says these were crowns of the glory of the Shechina, and Tosfos adds the point that they were, that therefore the Gemara is going to go on further to say that after the Chet Egel, the Jewish people lost them, and Moshe was given all of them. That is why Moshe's face shone, as we have at the end of Parashas Kisisa, because he had all that glory of the Shechina that instead came to him. Anyway, so each one had two crowns, Echad Keneged Nasa, the Echad Keneged Nishma, one corresponding to the fact that they had said Nasa and the other one Nishma. There's the question that a number of the Mephoshim bring up, that there should have been on the face of it either one crown, because the fact is the advantage is that they said Nasa before Nishma. It's not so much for saying Nasa and Nishma themselves, but rather they said it in the right order, or there should be three even. There should be one for Nasa, one for Nishma, and one and one for putting it in the proper order. So Mephoshim deal with different angles on it. It's, of course, a very common point that's brought up in Chassidus Chabad as well, the whole Maimer, B'Shar Sheik Dim, or Tafre Shai, Tafre Teher Rav, the whole famous Hemshech from the Rebbe Rashab that explores basic concepts in Chassidus begins with that point, and then and delves into that point, and then and deals with what it is. There was the idea, in other words, that the Nasa by itself is not the Nishma by itself, that is to say, is not really such a great thing. Nishma means, in other words, that we're going to listen according to what we understand of what Hashem says. But when you put Nasa before it, and thereby you demonstrate that you have that Kabbalah's oil to the Eivishter, then that makes the Nishma itself on a higher level, and therefore it deserves its own crown. And in that Maimur that Eber Hashab goes on to talk about the idea that a crown also symbolizes the idea of silence and ties it in with Keser being above all the spheres, and the word Keser itself, we find a place in Tanakh where it's used in the sense of being silent, and therefore it refers to that silence which represents Bittul that they had before Lakus, and therefore that they deserved all that, etc., etc. And of course he goes in a whole Arichos in that, and uses that as a jumping off point to explore many concepts in Chassidus. Anyway, so they got those crowns. Marsha talks about the idea that these two crowns actually represent they had Keser Torah now because they were receiving the Torah. They also had Keser Kohuna and Keser Malchus. They were given now the fact that they were going to be Koyanim, the Mamlachas Koyanim, and they're going to have the crown of Malchus. So now Marsha says, since they said Nasa before Nishma, so that means, in other words, that they were willing to do the Esses and the Loisa says, and they put the Esses first. So therefore, they have these, they deserve these crowns of Kohuna and Malchus. And we're saying, so each Malach is carrying both crowns. The fact that he's carrying one in one in the right hand and one in his left hand, representing therefore respectively Chesed and Gvura. Kohuna, the crown of Kohuna represents Chesed. We know the Kohen is Ish Chesed. The crown, the one on the side of Gvura represents Malchus, because the Melech, among other things, is supposed to execute judgment among the people. And that also corresponds respectively to the Esses and the Loisah says, where the Esses come from Chesed and the Loisah says come from Gvura. Then the Gemara continues, the Kivin Shechotu Yisrael, when the Jewish people sinned and made the Egel, Yodah Me'av Esrim Riboy Malachi Chabala, 120,000 Malachim of destruction came down, Upokum, and they took them off the people. So each Malach came, and since there were 600,000 Jews, and each one had two crowns, so you needed one Malach for each crown. Tosfos asks the question that, first of all, Tosfos says that there's an implication in the pasuk that there were two removals. But Tosfos says, don't we always say that midah tova is more stronger than midas poranus? So how is it that for midah tova only 600,000 malachim were sent, and now for midas poranus to punish them 1.2 million malachim, twice as many, were sent? Tosfos says that's exactly it. The malachim that came to give them the crowns were stronger malachim. Each one could hold two crowns together. The malachim that came to take them away were weaker malachim. Each one can only handle one crown. So that is in fact that midah tova is greater. Marsha goes on to explain that. So what happened when they sinned with the ego? They were over on an esseh and on a lois esseh. The esseh of anochi, which in fact is the source of all the mitzvahs esseh, and the lois esseh of lo yilcha, of not having other gods, which is the source of all the lois esseh. So now at this point, these malachim came and took the crowns away. First of all, Marashah says, representing the point, as the Gemara mentions in Avodah Zarah, up until that point, the malachim lovis would have had no control over them. Jews would have lived forever. Now, like this, he starts having control over them again, and he takes away the kohuna and the malchus, in the sense they're not being taken away right away, but eventually, over time, the chet ha'egel is going to be gradually paid off for a little bit at a time, and eventually there came a time, the time of the churban, when the rest of it, whatever was left over of it, was paid off, and then the Jewish people lost kohuna and malchus. So that's what it means. In other words, that's what it means. Marashah says that the malachim took away the crowns. In other words, that right now they lost the ruchnistic of crowns, but it means that the kahuna and the malchus that they represented, that was now in a state of suspension. And eventually, 900 years later, at the time of the Churban, they lost them entirely. Shenema, as the pasuk says, "Vayisnatzlu b'nei Yisrael es ed yomei har choriv." The pasuk says the Jewish people were stripped of their finery from Har Choriv, which is another name for Har Sinai, as the Gemara talks about later on. And Marashah also mentions, by the way, that's why the pasuk calls it over here Har Choriv, Moloshin Churban, because this took place at the time of the Churban. And Omer Abchama Bachanina, b'chodev tanu, b'chodev parku. You should know those crowns were originally given to them at Choriv. In other words, the words in the pasuk as edyam mehar chorev can be understood as both. It can mean that they received this edyam, they received this finery at chorev in the first place. We shouldn't think, in other words, that we're talking about some jewelry or something that they took out with them from Mitzrayim. This is something they received at har chorev, at har Sinai, and b'chorev perku, and at chorev they were made to take it off, because the words as edyam vayisnatzlu b'nei Yisrael as edyam mehar chorev also implies that at har chorev they took off that finery. So what do we mean? B'chorev tanu k'damrinim. They received them at Chorev. As we said, they received these crowns from the Malachim at Matan Torah. B'chorev parku, and they were stripped of them. They removed them at Chorev. D'chtiv, it's not for B'nai Yisrael, because it says the Jewish people took them off at Har Chorev. And Marashah also adds the point that the fact that you had double as many malachim also represents that there were two korbanos, where first the Jewish people lost these things, the korna and malchus, by the first Beis HaMikdash, then they received them back in the second Beis HaMikdash, and then they lost them again. So that's represented by having double as many malachim. Rabbi Yochanan, the kulan zocha Moshe v'natlan. However, Rabbi Yochanan says, you should know, Moshe had the schus to take all of them. He received all of those crowns that the Jewish people lost. Because after that, after it describes how the Jewish people took off edyam, took off this finery of theirs, the next pasuk continues, and Moshe yikach es ha'oil. Moshe took the tent and brought it outside the machna, etc. So how does that tell us? So Rashi explains two ways. Number one, we take the words of Moshe yikach by themselves, and we attach them as though they belong to the previous pasuk. By snatzlo b'nei Yisrael es edyam ha'choriv, u Moshe yikach. They stripped off their finery, and Moshe took it. Or the other explanation, Rashi says, is that the word ha'oihel can also be related to the word behiloi neiroi, which means the shine, the illumination. So therefore it means Moshe took all that illumination from those crowns. And yeah, Rashi adds, as Tosfos had said, that that's where Moshe got the rays of light that came from his face, is from that. Marashah says, what we mean by this, again, saying that the two crowns represent Kohuna and Malchus, so that represents the point. Moshe himself was zocheh to both those things. Moshe was considered a melech for many purposes. For example, Rashi mentions when the chatzotzrus were made, that the same way as you blow trumpets in front of a king, the same way Hashem said they should have trumpets blown in front of Moshe when he wants to summon the people or whatever. So he had the din of a melech, and he was also the kohen during the 7 days of the miluim, so therefore he got both of those crowns. Omer Rish Lakish, the Osir HaKadosh Baruch Hu lachzir lanu. Further, Rish Lakish says, in the future, Hashem will return those crowns to us. We haven't lost them forever. We're going to get them back. Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, Ufduye Hashem Yishuvun, those who were redeemed by Hashem, by the Gula Amitis Vashleima, will return. Uvo Tzion Bibinem, they'll come to Tzion, to Yerushalayim, with singing, the Simchas Olam Al Rosham, and with the eternal happiness on their head, sosim v'simcha yasigu. They'll achieve happiness and gladness. The nosu yogin va'anocha, and sorrow and sighing will run away. So what does simcha say? That means simcha shemei olam al rosham. Means the simcha will be forever on their head. So Marisha explains. In other words, what we mean is previous geulas happened through a malach. You have the expression of malach panav Hashem, even by Yitzias Mitzrayim, where it says anivalei malach, anivalei sodaf, etc. But the actual Yitzias Mitzrayim happened through Moshe, and in fact is described in the pasuk as vayishlach malach vayitzianim Mitzrayim. Lo osid lover, the geula is going to be directly by Hashem. That's what we mean of duryei Hashem. Doesn't say ufduya Mashiach or whatever, but ufduya Hashem, and therefore, it's going to have. Now you're not going to have anymore that those crowns are lost. Now those crowns are going to be olam forever. But primarily that's talking about Makas Bechoris. Didn't happen through a Malach or a Sodaf or what have you. But Yitzias Mitzrayim is not the same thing. Let's say it happened one after the other, but they're two different things. But we're saying the Gula Mitzvah Shleim is going to be done directly by Hashem. It's going to be, obviously, I mean, you are going to have Melech HaMashiach, but apparently what Marisha is saying, in other words, is that Mashiach is going to have such a bittul to Elikus that you can't even really call him a malach. It's a alderach like you have. For example, the Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya in a couple of places that sometimes you have a malach is sometimes called by Hashem's name. For example, what Ramban understands at the beginning of Parashas Vayera, when it says Vayera Elav Hashem, that Hashem appeared to Avram. So we're all familiar with what is the usual explanation from Rashi, that Hashem appeared to Avram, but then the three malachim came, so Avram asked Hashem to wait and ran off to serve the malachim. The Ramban has a different explanation of it. The malachim themselves are called Hashem because they're acting in the service of Hashem, and they have such bittul to Hashem that they can be called by his name. You have other examples of that also, where Malach says, I will do such and such, and he doesn't have the ability to do it himself, means he's speaking in Hashem's name. So in the same way, maybe Marisha means, in other words, that Mashiach will have an even greater degree of bittul to the Eibishter than Moshe Rabbeinu did, and therefore that it can be spoken of that the Geula happens directly through Hashem rather than through a boss of a dumb.
He's still a man of flesh and blood.
But he's still a man of flesh and blood, of course, yeah. Anyway, Eitz Yosef points out another meaning. The word me'ola, the word simcha shme'olam arosham, can also mean that simcha from olden times, that simcha of those crowns that they received all the way back in those olden times at the time of Matan Torah. Now that same simcha will be back on their heads, la'asid lavoi, when Mashiach comes. And also that it will be la'olam void. So me'olam means both, that it was from four times and also that it will be forever thereafter. The Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Elazar, b'shar sheik dimu Yisrael nashla nishma. When the Jewish people said nasa before nishma, yotza basko v'amar lahem, a basko came out and announced, mi gila levonai rozeh. Who revealed to my children, to the Jewish people, the secret shemalachei asharis mishtamshin bo? The malachei asharis use this, that they also do the same kind of thing. They do nasa and then nishma. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, Baruch Hu Hashem Malachim, bless Hashem His Malachim, Giborei Koyach, the ones who are mighty in power, Oisei Dvorei, who do Hashem's will, Lishmoy Abakel Dvorei, to listen to the sound of His words, implying Bereisha Oisei V'Hodu Lishmoya. First they do, then they listen, meaning, and then the word Shema also means to understand, like Shema Yisrael doesn't just mean hear, O Israel, means understand, O Israel. So the same thing, Lishma, first they do, and then Lishmoya, then they work on understanding why Hashem said it, and so forth. The vote being, in other words, Marisha says, a malach, after all, is completely ruchniistic. His soul rotzen is to do what Hashem wants, as opposed to a person has a yetzer tov and a yetzer hara. So, but then at Matan Torah, the secret was revealed to them that they have the ability to have one daya and be completely aligned with what Hashem wants. as in fact, we find Hashem himself says right after Matan Torah, he says to Moshe in Parshas Vayeshanan, and me yitin, if only it were possible that they would have levovam zelahem, you know, I see that they would continue to have this heart to fear me alone. In other words, that they would continue to be on the level of the malachim. So now the secret was revealed to them, and they actually did that, and they actually reached that, they actually reached that point. One point is there's a point Rabbi Levi Yitzchok makes in a couple of places in his writings that here the pasuk is associating with gvura, and in fact that is one facet of gvura. We talk about when we talk about Matan Torah, there's a certain connection. There's actually multiple connections between Matan Torah and gvura. First of all, the expression the Gemara often has when we talk about that the dibros being given by Hashem, the expression is they were given me pi hagvura. The expression is they were given from the mouth of the Gvura. And there's also the idea, for example, we know that of the three of us, Yitzchak is most closely associated with Gvura, and he's the one of it's brought in a couple of places, it's brought in the Torah, it's brought in the Zohar, that each of the others corresponds to one of the three, to one of the Shalosh Regalim, and Yitzchak corresponds to Shavuos. So Shavuos is the time of Gvura, and therefore that's we see that the Malachim are Giborei Koyach, and the Jewish people also reach that level of Gvura. Eitz Yosef points out an interesting point. He says, so what's the great secret, though? I mean, we're saying that they did an amazing thing by that, but why is it calling it a secret? So he brings an interesting idea from like this. We know that Godol HaMitzvah V'Oisa Yosef Misha'en HaMitzvah V'Oisa. When a person does a mitzvah, because he's commanded to by Hashem, he gets a greater schar than when he's not commanded, for a number of reasons. One of them being when a person is commanded, then he has a Yetzirah that tries to oppose it, as opposed to when he's doing it voluntarily. He doesn't have that. Apichsidus, there's the idea, because when the person is commanded by Hashem, mitzvah, Moloshin, Sabsa, Bechibur, he has a connection with Hashem. So therefore, in a way, by putting Nasa before Nishma, though, it means they're losing that advantage. It means they're doing it before they're even commanded to by Hashem. Because Nishma can also mean before we hear what Hashem has to do, we're already doing it. What Hashem wants us to do, we're already doing it. So in that sense, they lose that advantage. But nevertheless, when the Yetzirah was removed from them, now there's no problem with doing it. There's no lesser issue with doing with being Einim at Silva Voisa. And therefore, that was the secret that they discovered. Now that we're free of the Yetzirah, then we're able to do that. We're able to do Nasa and then Nishma. Whereas when you have a Yetzirah, it's true, you kind of have to put that to a certain extent. You have to put the Nasa first. You have to put the Nishma first, because you have to be commanded by Hashem, and only then you do the mitzvah.
It's still a very great thing when you do these things on your own without being commanded, because you know from your neshama, this is what I need to do.
So there is that, but on the other hand, you have the idea, God olam at silver voice, Yosef Mishen at silver voice. So yeah, right. And there is, you know, you have, for example, you know, you have the famous explanation that Eber talks about, why is it in Manishtana, we have Matbilin first, whereas in Nusach Ashkenaz, they have Matzah first. When you think about it, Matbilin is only a minute, whereas Matzah is Daraisa. And there's the famous idea that the Rebbe discusses that in a way the Minhagim show our greater connection with Hashem, because it means that voluntarily we're trying to come close to Hashem. So there is that point, it's true. But on the other hand, when we talk about, for example, how difficult it is and what a person has to overcome in order to do it, then the mitzvahs that we're commanded to have a greater, there's a greater pushback from the Yetzirah against them.
As far as tzedakah goes, there's a feminine aspect and a masculine aspect. The masculine aspect is that when it's tzedakah is given and self-generated by the person.
Right, right. So that's true. Right, yeah. That's true.
No single by himself.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. The Gemara continues. Amar Rav Chama bar Chanina, my dichtiv katapuach ba'atzei hayar, remember. What does it mean, the pasuk in Shir HaShirim, like an apple tree among the trees in the forest? You know, the trees in the forest have no fruit on them, as opposed to an apple tree has wonderful fruit on it. So lama nimshal Yisrael tapuach, why are the Jewish people being compared to an apple tree? Now, Marsha points out on the face of it, if you look at the context of the pasuk, it sounds like actually the pasuk is comparing Hashem to an apple tree. The whole pasuk, the pasuk goes, "Kasapuach ba'atzei hayar, kedoidi bein habanim, so is my beloved among the other boys." So in other words, we're comparing the Rashi mentions on the pasuk, but you know, you have there's Hashem, there's Lahavdil, the various other powers that seem to be in opposition to Hashem, but Hashem is greater and better than all of them. So the comparison to an apple is the comparison about Hashem, not about the Jewish people. So Maharsha says, okay, fine, but still, the Gemara is assuming that it goes together with the end of the previous pasuk, Kein Rayosi Ben Habonos, where the end of the previous pasuk is Hashem saying, so is my beloved among the girls, is more special. And then it continues, because the Porach Ba'atzi Ayar, so we're saying, therefore, that the Jewish people are like an apple tree among the barren trees of the forest. So why dafka the comparison to an apple tree is the question. So Lama Nimshal Yisrael HaTapuach. So the answer is Loi Malach. It tells you Ma Tapuach Sepiria Kodem Olav. Just as with an apple tree, the fruit develops before the leaves, which means, in other words, Rashi points out with most other trees, you first have that you usually have the leaves grow on the tree first, and then later on the fruits start blossoming and developing. But with an apple tree, it's not like that. The same way the Jewish people went out of the expected order and put Nasa before Nishma. Now, Tosfos points out the problem that apple trees, we can see actually, if you go to an apple orchard, you'll find the leaves are on the tree before the fruits. So what does the Gemara mean? So Tosfos says that over here, the word tapuach does not mean apples, it means asrogim. Now, asrogim, unlike most other fruits, last on the tree from one year to the next. Most fruits, eventually, they reach the end of their growth. And then if you don't pick them, then they fall off the tree. Esrogim will keep on growing on the tree. That's the Gemara mentions in Sukkah HaDorbi, Elonim Mishon Lashana. They last on the tree from one year to the next. I remember seeing one time in a botanic garden many years ago, there was an esrog growing on a tree that was literally the size of a person's head because it had been growing on there for many years and then nobody had ever picked it. But anyway. So the vote would be, in other words, that the esrog is there before the following year's leaves. Eventually, the leaves fall off at some point, but meanwhile, the esrog is still there, and therefore it precedes that year's leaves. On the other hand, Ben Arya in the back of the Gemara says that maybe what the Gemara means is maybe it is talking about apples. He says the fact is with apples, you have the blossoms start growing before the leaves. Eventually, yeah, it takes the blossoms of several months to mature into fruits. And during that time, meanwhile, the leaves have grown. But when you start out, when the tree is first has the blossoms on it, then you don't yet have the leaves on it at that point. Maybe that's what the Gemara means. Anyway, the point is that we're saying the Jewish people also were like that. Most trees, that's what we're saying, all the trees in the forest, the various non-fruit-bearing trees, or even the ones that bear other kinds of inferior fruit, the leaves come first, then the fruits. That would represent the way that the Goyim had the approach to the Torah, where if we're going to accept it, it's going to be first Nishma and then Nasa. First, we have to understand what we're getting into, and only then are we going to accept it. Whereas the Jewish people are like the apple, or as Tosfos says, like the esrog, which is the other way around. So the Gemara tells in this connection, there was a certain tzduki who saw Rava, and it's very possible the word tzduki over here may have been changed by the censors. In Rava's times, the tzdukim were pretty much extinct. They were around and very powerful in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash. Rava is a couple of hundred years later. So it's very possible the word is actually supposed to be min or mino or whatever, which among other things refers to some of the early Christians and various other types of minim and apikorsim and whatnot. Anyway, the chazil rava, so he saw rava, to come ayin b'shmaita. He was delving deeply into a discussion in Torah. The yasvetz ba'asa didei tusei kare, his feet, the way he was sitting, not his feet, his fingers were under his feet. He was sitting like in a crouched position, sort of. The kamayitz bahu, and he was pressing on his feet or his legs were pressing on his fingers. V'kamabanatz ba'asei dama, and blood is flowing out from his fingers. He's pressing down with his feet on his finger with his legs on his fingers so hard and not even realizing that blood is coming out of them. Omale, so the min or the tzduki or whatever it is, says to Rava, I'm a pchuzo, pziza, you hasty nation, dekadmitu puma l'udne, or pumaychu l'udneichu, you put your mouths before your ears, by Matan Torah, akati, b'pziza seichu, b'pachzu seichu, kaimisu, and still now, all these years later, you're still continuing with that haste of yours. In other words, he's telling Rava the same way as by Matan Torah, you jump to the gun over there and you say Nasa before Nishma, the same way now you're being just as careless now and you're going and learning and not even caring about the fact that you're injuring yourself. Bereisha Yibori L'chol Mishma. You should have first given a, you should have first asked Hashem to tell you what's going on and to hear it. Imatzitu Kablitu. If you're able to receive it or not, if you're able to accept it, V'yiloi L'kablitu. And if not, then not. So what do you think you were doing? Omale. So Rava answers, Anan de Saginin b'shleimusa. Here's the difference between us and you. We Jewish people go in a way of shleimus. We went with Hashem in shleimus. We knew, Rashi says, we're doing me'ava. We relied on Hashem that he's not going to give us more than we can handle, as the famous expression, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Baba Truni Embriyosav. So therefore, Sivban Tumas Yisharim Tanchem. Therefore, we can apply to us Jewish people the first half of a Pasuk in Mishlei that says the Tmimus of the upright leads them in the proper path. In other words, we were upright. We knew that we're gonna deal fairly with Hashem, and He's gonna deal fairly with us. And we had that tmimus to accept that Hashem knows what He's doing, and He's not gonna give us more than we can handle. And the result was tanchem, that it led us in the right path to receive the Torah and to become Hashem's special people. On the other hand, Hanach Inshi, those people, meaning people like you, Desagun Ba'alilusa, where you instead go with crooked ways and with excuses and then so forth, and disbelief really, Ksibuhu, about you. It says the second half of the pasuk, Veselef Boigdim Yishradim, the crookedness of the deceitful is going to rob them. So in other words, you're crooked type people. You don't trust Hashem, and Hashem wouldn't have trusted you. And the result is that you were disloyal to Hashem, and the result is Yishadim, it robs you of the ruchnius that you could have had. Maharsho also mentions in this connection the idea of the when people want to go in the straight way and they act with the tmimus to Hashem, so that itself helps them, Hashem helps them to go on the right road. Tanchem, it leads them, Hashem helps, that tmimus leads them on the right path where they themselves might not have been able to do it. The Selef Bogdim, whereas on the other hand, the crookedness of the deceitful ends up bringing them on a crooked path. That's Haboli Tamei, Poschim Lo, that if a person wants to become Tamei, then Hashem opens up that crooked path for him and he can go on it. So in short, in other words, Rav is telling him, you think that we were too hasty and we jumped the gun with Nasa and Ishma. Adrabba, that was the right thing to do. Whereas you can't conceive of such an idea because you don't trust Hashem and He doesn't trust you, and therefore you couldn't receive the Torah. Continues the Gemara. Amar of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amar of Yonason. My dichtiv. What does it mean? Another pasuk in Shir Hashirim. Libavtini achoisi kala. You have made me love you, my sister Kala. Libavtini ba'achas me'inayich. You've made me love you with one of your eyes. Now, why only one? So it means b'tchila ma'achas me'inayich. Ba'achas me'inayich. Hashem is saying, from the beginning, when you first accepted the Torah on themselves, even before you did it, then you have the advantage, ba'achas me'inayich, you have one of your eyes, l'chshetasi, and now when you actually go and do those mitzvahs, when you not only do when you not only have that you've accepted the Torah, but you actually start fulfilling it in practice, b'shtei'inayich, then you'll have the two eyes, and then I'll be, then you'll bring me even closer to you with not only the acceptance of the Torah, but also the ma'aseh mitzvahs. Maharsho explains you have two different ways of seeing. We can talk about a person sees something with their mind's eye, and we can talk about that a person sees something with their physical eyes. So what we're saying over here, so first, libavtini, you've showed that you were wholehearted with me by saying nasa v'nishma, but you hadn't yet done it. So therefore, all you have is you perceived it with your mind's eye. So therefore, that's only one eye. When you actually do the mitzvahs, then you'll be seeing of course as well, and then you'll have the advantages of both eyes. Continues the Gemara. Now, on the other hand, though, another relevant pasuk from Shir Hashirim. Oma Ula Aluva Kala Mezana Mitochupasa. How chutzpahdik, Rashi explains the word aluva comes from a word that means chutzpah. How chutzpahdik is the Kala who's Mezana right there during her chuppah, referring to the Jewish people. They're still there in Har Sinai, and they already made the eidol. Omer of Mori brought Bas Shmuel. So Rav Mori, who was the son of the daughter of Shmuel, says, and why is he called that? So Rashi, in a few places in Shas, explains that his mother, who was Shmuel's, was one of Shmuel's daughter, had been kidnapped and raped by a goy. She became pregnant. Afterwards, this goy actually became a ger. He's mentioned in a few places in Gemara. He's called Isu Giyora. But because the baby was conceived when he was still a goy, that baby is not considered lahalocha, related to him, something which comes up in a few places in Shas and even has implications in halacha. And therefore, the Gemara doesn't call him Rav Mori, the son of Isur. It calls him rather Rav Mori, the son of the daughter of Shmuel. Tosfos in a couple of places discusses that and says maybe not necessarily. There's a Gemara in Ksubas that implies that none of those girls ever were raped by the Goyim. It's true, the Gemara in Ksubas says that they were captured by Goyim, but from a Gemara in Ksubas it comes out that none of them were actually raped by the Goyim. So rather, Tosfos says that no, it's just because his grandfather was Shmuel. So therefore, the Gemara would prefer to give him the yichus to his grandfather Shmuel, because compared to that, his father was a much lower level person. Anyway, the point is, so the Mori says Maikra. So where's a pasuk where that expresses that idea about the chutzpah of the kala who does that? The pasuk says in Shir HaShirim, Ad Shahamelach b'Mesiboy, while the king was yet at his banquet, Nirdi Nosan Reichai. My neud, which is a type of spice, like shibboleth neud, and the Torah, nosan reichoi, gave away its fragrance, like a nosan, Rashi explains, like gave it away to others. So in other words, the Jewish people personified or saying in Shir HaShirim, look at what we did, even while the king was still at his banquet, was still there at Har Sinai, and already we did wrong, and our neud, that fragrance of theirs, lost its smell because of the chet ha'egel. However, nevertheless, even so, the Hashem still shows how precious we are to him, even though the Pasuk is mentioning about this derogatory thing about him. Still, Hashem gave Shlomo the idea to write the Pasuk in a way that shows the preciousness of the Jewish people. Because it says it gave away its fragrance, which after all can also be understood in more a positive sense, like it gave forth its fragrance. Instead of it could have said blatantly, his sriach, it started stinking, which would show blatantly that it means that it's really bad now. And instead Hashem used the pasuk is using a word of a more delicate way of saying it. Tosfos says, okay, I mean, it wouldn't necessarily have said histriach per se, because that's a really derogatory term, and psukim don't necessarily talk like that, but still, it could have used a word like orav or ozav, the fragrance was mixed with other things, or that it was abandoned or whatever, and it still would have meant that, and instead it uses the word nosan, which kind of implies that it gave it forth in a positive way. So now the Gemara continues on that theme. Tanan Rabbanan. And now, since we mentioned the word aluva kala, so now the Gemara mentions another drasha on that word, also related to that word aluva. Hanel lovim ve'enim olvim, people who allow themselves that people act towards them with chutzpah and embarrass them, but they don't act with chutzpah back to others. Shomim chepasim ve'enim meshivim, they listen to other people, they hear other people making fun of them and they don't respond. Oisim me'ava, they serve Hashem with love, realizing that any of these surim they have are Hashem trying to clean up their avar, Hashem cleaning up their avaris. Ve'osmeichim b'yisurim, and exactly that, they're happy with yisurim, realizing that it's for their benefit. Aleim akosiv omer, on such people, the pasuk says, "Va'oyavav katzeis Hashemish b'gvurasei." Those who love Hashem will be like the sun when it shines forth in its full strength. So on the simple level, the Gemara is bringing this drasha in because, as we mentioned, aluva kala. So we mentioned another drasha that involves that rare shodish olav with the positive and their love and vein of olim. There's also an explanation that the connection is. We just said that we Jewish people say about ourselves, and we have Hashem wrote about us in Shir HaShirim about what a terrible thing we did with the Chet HaEgel, but we don't go and say, well, let's try to cover that over and let's try to pretend it didn't happen or anything like that. Rather, we accept the aluva, the ne'alovim. We allow ourselves to be humiliated over it. So therefore, that itself is a great advantage. Why are we comparing them dafka to the sun? So there's one explanation, because the sun went through that. You know, you have the famous thing where the moon complained that the sun and moon shouldn't be the same size. The sun didn't speak up for itself and said Hashem told the moon to go diminish itself. So therefore, the sun is a great example of that kind of thing where someone is being made fun of and they don't answer back. There's a well-known vote, by the way, that says about that, when a person does that, when a person is being mocked or humiliated or whatever and doesn't answer back, they have a tremendous power to give brachas. And there are known stories about that, of people who did that, and Taka had the capability that they Taka gave brachas that were niskayim as far as people having children and other such examples. So yeah. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Yud Bey's ear. During the time of the Beis Mikdash, we know only the Kohen Gadol could go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and only on Yom Kippur. But La'asid Lavoi, not only the Kohen Gadol will go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim every single Yid, because every single Yid will be on the level of the Kohen Gadol, because we'll be Mamlachas Kohenim, and even Kohenim Gadolim will be able to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and not just on Yom Kippur, but whenever he wants. Continuing on Halachas of Shechyonu and Atov HaMeitiv, when a person sees a friend after at least 30 days, and we're talking about a very dear friend, or how much more so, somebody who's greater than him, his father or his Rebbe, and he's taka happy to see them, then he makes the brach Shechyonu. And that would apply even if in between he received letters from him. Whether it would apply if they talked on the phone or had video calls or whatever, I don't know, that's a different question. If he sees him after 12 months, then he says the bracha machaya hamesim. Because after 12 months, a person might be expected to be forgotten the way a mess is usually forgotten after 12 months. As we find, the Gemara brings a drosha on the pasuk and tillim, nishkachti kemes milevo, he's clearly over it, just like a person usually has yush after losing something and not finding it for 12 months, the same way Hashem makes it that a person forgets a mess after 12 months. So like this, the person is still alive, so you say mechaya mesim. If you don't say shechiyonu, just mechaya mesim. However, if you received letters from him during that time or in between, you got regards from him, then the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says you would say Shech Yonu in that case, because after all, you did hear from him during that time. The Alter Rebbe, on the other hand, says you would say Mechaya Mesim in that case as well. With all of this, there's no difference between men and women. A man sees his wife for the first time in 30 days or a year or whatever, or sees a sister, etc., or the husband, etc., then they make that bracha. What about then if you have a friend who you never saw him, but you exchanged letters and therefore you became friendly that way? So if you see him later on, you don't make a bracha. Because since you never saw him in person, you don't have such a tremendous ava that you should be so happy as to warrant saying Shech Yonu or Mechaya Mesim.
I think this thing of seeing somebody after 30 days, really face-to-face, neshama to neshama, not the cell phone.
No, I understand, but I'm saying if you saw him maybe by cell phone or talked to him or whatever during those 30 days, maybe you wouldn't necessarily say Shechiyonu. I'm not sure about that. Well, this is, of course, true, right?
Same thing. Right. Neshama to neshama, much more real than cell phone.
Yeah, that's true. Don't